Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, household RPG from Come On.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So finally something that's good from them. Empire of the Petal Throne creator controversy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just leave it there. D&D skirmish.
Okay.
And Roll versus Evil.
Okay. Is that L-E or L-L?
Roll as in die. Yeah, okay. Double L. Yeah. Roll as in dice.
Not the critical kind. Gotcha.
Right. Yeah, it both would probably work. And actually, yeah, evil is a little bit strong a term when you hear some of the other things it's related to.
Okay.
We'll go from there.
Sure.
Okay, so starting a little bit lighter. Ooh. So finally, Come On is doing something not licensed IP. They're still going to Kickstarter, so they gotta get that infusion.
Yeah.
So they just recently came off of a $9 million Kickstarter for Marvel Zombies Zombicide. Crazy. Okay. So it's, yeah, the Marvel characters all, you know, based on that weird
What If comic.
And the tempting thing about it was there was a, you know, giant, like, whatever, 20-centimeter Galactus that had two heads, like the non-zombie and zombie version.
Oh, two swappable heads.
Yeah, swappable heads, so he could be changed.
Right. Okay.
And that was a pretty amazing looking miniature. Not.
Can you call it a miniature?
It's a statue.
Really?
Statuette. So that was pretty amazing. But Marvel Zombies is kind of okay. Mm-hmm. So finally, they're doing something that's not that should belong on Kickstarter. So they're kickstarting a English version of the award-winning Italian RPG called Household. So Household was produced by 2LM Press, who was bought by Come On. So Come On owns them, and I think to produce kind of in-house things.
Okay.
The first thing they worked on for Come On is a Zombicide TTRPG, of course. But in Household, you play as littlelings. So small creatures like fairies or bogarts that are kind of European folklore type characters. So the littles or
that
all
is,
of those.
That's the first thing that popped them on the head, the littles, yeah.
Right. And so that's fun because then a mouse is a boss style monster. Mm. You know, you get the scale of things changes. And so this in 2019 won RPG of the Year the Lucha Comics and Games convention. And so the designers, Rico Cirinano and Simone Formicola, talked about this new version. So Household was their first RPG. We're so proud and thrilled to finally have a chance to share it with the whole world. This new edition will be the most ambitious project for us so far.
Hmm. Cool.
So it sounds like a good thing to support. And kind of a sweet setting, you know, not
well, yeah. I mean, okay, I know nothing about it other than you play little people, but as soon as you went, and a mouse is a large opponent, I'm like, oh, so we're going to like fight mice with like little thimble armor
and
needle swords. And I'm like, that could get gruesome.
And spiders too. And,
yeah.
But you're in like a little European kitchen and you're collecting breadcrumbs.
And all of a sudden, spider, yeah. It has the potential to be,
yeah,
I think, cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see. And from some of the promotional artwork and stuff, it looks really fun because it looks like a fantasy dungeon delving RPG. But you can tell, this is just a funny scale thing.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, so we'll see. So that's a nice thing, something to look forward to. Come On isn't completely corrupted.
If they're doing with Come On, is there a miniatures tie-in, or is it only kind of?
They didn't, mention anything so far. But I mean, there eventually could be, and this would not probably be a difficult thing to adapt to a board game as well if they had a designer that wanted to give that a shot. I'm sure Eric M. Lang is got his schedule pretty full, but we'll see. All right. So I love our patrons. Our patrons are wonderful. They make me happy all the time, and we're always discussing interesting topics, and they send me links for things.
But
I one of these days, one day I got a link from Matt, one of the patrons, and it was a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
A video by Polly from Lace and Steel, who is kind of a relatively new YouTube channel. And the video, you could see the kind of anguish on her face as she's describing this situation. And
I watched this at work, so I could only listen.
And so it was very emotional. And the reason for it being emotional is if you go to a video 8 months later...
Mm. I mean, earlier.
Eight months earlier. Yeah. If you rewind, 8 months earlier on the channel, Polly is talking about the first tabletop RPG she ever played, what brought her into the hobby, the thing that's like always going to warm, you know, her heart for the first, you know, setting that was so compelling that, you know, this is the hobby for me. This is what I want to do. And that RPG was Empire of the Petal Throne.
Right, so
the
Tecumel
setting, right. And so basically we've gotten some news recently that they've uncovered, and I don't know why it took so long to uncover this, but under a pseudonym, the creator, Professor M.A.R. Barker, wrote Serpent's Walk, an anti-Semitic novel, so produced in, 91 under a pseudonym, or released in 91.
Released in 91, yes, that late.
Yes, yeah, published, yeah. So probably end of his life, because he didn't...
I suppose published in 91 doesn't mean that's when he wrote it. Like,
that's true. Oh, right, that's true.
Because I am aware of Empire of the Petal Throne. I don't really know the basics, but other than it's sort of a formative kind of one of the original, like, non-D&D settings. And supposedly it has, like, a great or very in-depth world building. So although I've never read it, never played it, I am aware of it and it's kind of its history. Knowing it popped up around, like, the 70s made me think the author died like around like the 80s, early 90s. So to hear something was published in 91, I'm kind of like, were they still active?
Yeah, I thought he lived until the late 90s. Yeah, I thought so. But maybe not.
I'm not sure.
So I think, I may not be remembering correctly, but I believe Barker was an anthropologist. And
that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, that was the reason that people were like, wow, there's so much detail. You kind of like Tolkien, you know,
the language.
Yeah, being so into the language. So, yeah, it was a very unique setting because it was kind of fantasy, the sci-fi elements. And, you know, very early on, that was a very exciting blend because it wasn't taking whole cloth from, you know, Howard or Tolkien. So people were excited by this. So a statement was released by the Tecumel Foundation Board of Directors. So they have to address this. I mean, they can't ignore this because everything that they're doing is based on this guy's work. So the board of directors wants to acknowledge that our research shows that Professor M.A.R. Barker wrote Serpent's Walk, an anti-Semitic novel that was published under a pseudonym in 1991. We've done our due diligence to ascertain the facts regarding Serpent's Walk and Professor Barker's affiliation with the Journal of Historical Review, and we believe this needs to be recognized as part of Professor Barker's past. Well, nobody today is responsible for the odious views Professor Barker presented in Serpent's Walk. We are responsible for recognizing this book is part of his legacy. That is acknowledgement. This acknowledgement was not done earlier. Was and is a mistake. Yeah, it took a while, and we apologize for that. We are reaching out to several Jewish organizations to express our outrage over the findings and make our priority to work with them through this issue. What Professor Barker did was wrong and forever tarnished his creative and academic legacy. As stewards of the world of Tecumel, we reject and repudiate Serpent's Walk and everything it stands for and all other anti-Semitic activity Professor Barker was involved in. The Tecumel Foundation has never been involved with or profited from publication, distribution, or sale of Serpent's Walk in any way, shape, or form. All the proceeds from the sales of Tecumel-related material have gone and will continue to go to the foundation and its work and not to any racist or anti-Semitic organizations or causes in any way, shape, or form. So they wanted to be very correct. We are not, there's no connection.
That's a very clear and I think pretty well-worded refutation.
Right. So what do we do? Like, you know what? So now that foundation now has the responsibility to, you know, donate to worthy causes and make any profits that are generated from this work do good, you know, to kind of undo or, you know, to kind of to counteract, you know, I don't know.
You're channeling me talking with your hands.
it's a really difficult thing. And then, so if, you know, and if this is the case, and I think this is a lot worse than things we've seen before.
Sure.
Like this is definitely like, you know, direct connection to anti-Semitic writings,
right,
as opposed to, you know, people 100 years ago that had crappy racist ideas because
the video that I listened to, that Layson Steele, I think the host had a pretty good point about like these three P's. Profit, perception, and platform, where, okay, the author is dead, where they are no longer directly profiting from sales of their work, connected or not. And it sounds like the Tecumel Foundation is still profiting from the Tecumel or Empire of the Petal Throne. Maybe they have a responsibility, or at least that kind of bleeds into perception, to then go, okay, you know what?
Yeah.
We didn't know about this. Our bad. It should have been addressed way earlier. We're going to try and make this right by giving, I don't know, a portion of proceeds or whatever to related organizations. That's one way, I guess, to do it. But then, like, perception, I think perception's more the individual, right?
Yes.
Like, what do we, the small we, have to do about this? Well, honestly, we don't have to do anything other than decide for ourselves, and again, this was brought up in the video, whether or not we can separate the art from the artist, or whether knowing this association about Barker kind of forever taints the Tecumel setting for us.
Right.
And in the case of that Lace and Steel video, all of a sudden, yeah, this breaks it for me.
Yeah, it was really, really heartbreaking.
Last one was Platform, where are people still platforming these ideas, and can people use this product to platform the ideas? And that's where things kind of get a bit grayer, because the answer is yes, they probably could. Right. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's difficult. And the one thing that it's definitely doing is giving more ammunition to the kind of anti-OSR, like all old gamers are racist, secret Nazis and whatever.
I kind of had that quip about, yeah, well, you know. I think the OSR gets bashed on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, it's a mild tangent here, I don't think there's any more or less bad actors in the OSR group than any other group.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happens, and I've done it too, is you kind of associate, well, if you want to play this old school 1970s way, that kind of means you want to bring like kind of done that too. I mean, I'm sure that's true for some people. Like they want to go, let's go back to the good old days. Well, what you mean is the good old days is white people only, pretty much, right? But I mean, there's totally fair amount. That came out wrong. I think there's just as many problem actors in modern gaming as there are in old school. And yeah, I guess it would be unfortunate and also unfair, I think, if people go, oh, Empire of Petal Throne, old school, yeah, all those OSR grognards are Nazis, right? Then you're just like, no, that doesn't work, right? Then you're just being a jerk. So.
Yeah, so, yeah, bad news. And that was really, it was just really sad, because going back to that earlier video and that the love and enthusiasm of Empire of the Petal Throne, and then having to do the, I can't believe this. Yeah, just having something like kind of ripped out of your nostalgia and like, wow. And also, they made a comment, Polly said in the video, you know, now that you see it, after this information comes out, you see it in a different light. You look at that work and say, why couldn't I see this before? This was a completely homogenous, like, you know, the setting was like a completely racially homogenous. And like, why didn't I see these things, you know, standing out before in that work? And it's just because, with that you don't have the knowledge that.
I think you kind of, I would imagine most people tend to assume the benefit of the doubt, right? You kind of want to assume the good in people. We're like, okay, since on that video she brought up J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, and when you're reading Harry Potter, you're like, yeah, this little whimsical thing, and then you're just like, ah, damn.
Right.
Yeah, why didn't I see this pervy ghost in the boys' bathroom? And, oh, man, the goblins do, So it's one of those things. Like, you kind of, of course, it's hindsight is 20/20, you kind of want to assume the best and no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. This also makes you question like where he was teaching and what was going on in that department of anthropology that like, you know, you have professor.
Well, back in the good old days of 1970s, whatever, yeah.
Working on your novel there, Professor?
Yeah.
Anyhow, well, let's move on to something less upset. Here's the palate cleanser.
Sure.
So Dungeons & Dragons is actually WizKids, producing a competitive board game. And just like everything else, they're late to the party. So they're seeing skirmish-level, you know, games as becoming popular. So, hey, we need a board game based in D&D.
Board game or whatever.
It's a board game, basically, but it's in miniatures. And
cool. I haven't seen any board, but I you say they're late to the party. What else could a giant corporation be, right? Like, how many levels of approval does something have to go through before it gets approved, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, big companies like this, they just can't be on the cutting edge of anything, right?
Right.
So, but I remember Dungeon Command? That was, I want to say like early 2000s, maybe 2010, some kind of card-based, miniatures-based, D&D-themed skirmish
game, whatever.
I think it was around the same time as 4E because I never played it, but I think people who did play it said it's basically a stripped down 4E.
Like combat only tactic.
Yeah, and my thing was like I've kind of mellowed out on 4E, but my thing now is like if you can port it over to a miniatures war game with basically no changes, how the fuck do you call it an RPG, right? Yeah. Anyway, so that whole point and the whole tangent was this doesn't seem like it's the first time, certainly not the first time they've done a skirmish game.
Yeah.
Hey, chainmail is where D&D came from. Right?
Yeah, that's a
so
good point.
Back to our roots.
Maybe.
However many years later.
Yeah, so it's funny because it just reminded me so much of their attempt to jump on the X-Wing bandwagon with Attack Wing. So it's like, what if X-Wing, I had forgotten about that.
Yeah,
they X-Wings were dragons.
I had forgotten about that. Yeah. Man, that just disappeared, didn't it?
Well, actually, it's still going.
I take it back. All right.
Yeah, that was the thing. I was surprised in this article they talked about. They're releasing like their 11th wave, like I think last year or something, the 11th wave of Attack Wing came out. I mean, dragon miniatures are fun, but who is still playing Attack Wing?
Yeah. You know what? I have no idea what an Attack Wave box looks like. I don't think it's a necessarily bad idea commercially because people are going to want Dragon Minis for whatever game they're playing.
Right,
there's a game attached to it as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, by the way, it's proprietary, so you got to buy all those little turn
markers
and these special dice and the dials.
Exactly like X-Wing. I mean, they just ripped it off like unabashedly, like the rulers and everything, you know, the turn.
Well, if things aren't broke, why fix them?
Right. Hopefully, they license that from.
No, I don't think they
because Little or
you know what?
Fantasy Flight.
You can't prove
we didn't independently
come up with it.
Yeah, that's true.
So back
to parallel thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
this
Gamma
Skirmish.
Gamma Expo, they released this game. So competitive skirmish board game, where players battle. Rival adventurers and monsters in a quest for glory. So 21 miniatures and will feature the Harpers and Zentarim factions from Forgotten Realms.
Don't care. Don't care. But you know what? I'm sure people who like Forgotten Realms go awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome, right?
Yeah. So. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be using like the pre-painted WizKids stuff, or the kind of HeroClix style stuff. And there was something recently, I think it was a WizKids product, where they were doing a promotional video and they were putting the miniatures on the board, and you're like, oh, look at these cool miniatures. And the one guy was like holding like a long sword or something, and it was just curled. Yeah, they couldn't even for the video straighten out, or at least like replace, you know, like they spray food with like, you know, varnish to make it look juicy. They couldn't even like swap out the curly Q sword. On the miniatures, like, oh yeah, you're kind of admitting right there.
As someone who knows how the food is photographed for those things, and you could definitely not fucking eat it. Like,
right.
Bro, that is Elmer's glue in your milk, right? So, I would actually kind of respect WizKids more if they went like, we've just opened it from the box.
Yeah, that's
here's what you get, right?
Right.
Everybody knows WizKids. Stuff is like erectile dysfunction swords and banners and whatever, you know. We're just like, nope, this is what you get. This is, we didn't repaint this or repose this, whatever.
Right.
So I don't know. Only 21 miniatures in this game.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe you're kind of recycling, kind of
I wonder
grunts and stuff.
If they are kind of generic warrior types.
I wonder, or if they're going with some narrative, like there's like two competing bands or something.
Maybe.
So it is like named characters and things. Yeah, because they name the faction. So I wonder, what that means.
Well, no idea how it plays, but maybe it's kind of like, who knows? Okay, like we just got, not the physical version, but the PDF version of Blaster Volume 4, which has Sludge Nations in it.
Yes.
Which I was kind of surprised. It's new faction lists, right? And if you kind of ally yourself with one of these factions that can be used as either the named faction or an archetype, you kind of open up access to these other units, right?
Uh-huh.
So, but I brought that up because that can be used as like a template for anything you want to make, right? You kind of play just naming things differently, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if this D&D skirmish game is going to be, okay, we have these two groups. Within these two groups, you have your basic warrior types, and we're going to give you these like command cards or commander cards or whatever mm-hmm. that add extra customized abilities to your characters. Mm-hmm. So you don't need more figures. You just need, okay, I'm playing a Harper's commander, which is this and this card of abilities or whatever, right? So right, it's like, right, oh, right. You're using the whatever, the Zentrum commander. You have the same miniature, mm-hmm. which is kind of going to be confusing as fuck on the table, right. But you have access to your cards over there. Extra add-ons would be a way to give additional abilities without having to increase the number of miniatures.
That's
and adds a collectible card nature, which people are going to love.
Yeah,
so
that's true. Yeah.
No idea if that's what they're going to do. That would be one way to do it.
Mm.
Yeah, I also want to see what the board looks like.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't find any images in this press release, but they did mention the game will feature a combat dial card system. So I guess you're like, you know, turning a dial on your hit points. And
You're saying, I'm going to move swoop to the left.
Oh, right. Or you're setting, you're setting like your
you know what? Movements. Again, I'm kind of all over the place here today, but the StarCraft, the Fantasy Flight StarCraft board game, mm-hmm. fantastic. They didn't use a combat dial, but you had to set your order and then put it face down on the board in the area you were affecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then one aspect of play was, okay, I went first. Oh, you put your counter on top of mine, which means I don't get to do it until it resolves top down, right? That was really cool.
Yeah, that's
and it was also hidden. So if it's some kind of combat dial, it could be, here's my whatever warrior combat dial. I'm going to set it to this number and this maneuver,
mm-hmm.
and you open up a whole bunch of tactical stuff about, am I going to go before or after? What's going to happen first?
Right.
So that could be really interesting.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Or it could just be 19, 18, 17, 15, right?
Yeah,
not sure which.
That's a good point. Yeah, because even Free League did that with... Forbidden Lands, they had some cards where you could use in combat for like, you know, what you're doing, what your action is, and you would hold that, and then depending on what happened to you and what the initiative order was, it either it defeated an attack or mitigated it, or it canceled each other, and things canceled each other
kind
out.
Of a bit like rock, paper, scissors or a bit like poker, like, okay, I'm playing the game, but I'm also playing my opponent and looking at the board state to try and decide what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what the board looks like, because there was some miniatures game before that didn't use measurement.
Mm-hmm.
They had like circles on the board
that
showed the movement paths your units could take, but that also incorporated line of sight.
Oh.
Like a certain color indicated, like, you could see the other identically colored spaces on the board.
Right.
And terrain and kind of line of sight was built into each board section. And I thought that was, I like miniatures games.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a pretty cool way to do it with a board game. Like, I'm on this red space. I can see every other red space. Oh, that one's blue because it's behind a wall. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can't see it.
Yeah,
if they did something like that, again, it could be cool. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. So, this was talked a bit about on the designer's Twitter. So, so he released a little statement. So, Nicholas Yu on Twitter was talking about being the designer of this game. And they showed it off at Gamma Expo. And we're going to get a release of it in the third quarter of this year. So, coming up.
I wonder if I'm tripping over my words. I think Adepticon.
Mm-hmm.
is currently happening
right now.
Because the Sludge War game people are at Adepticon, which probably means they haven't shipped my resin head conversion bits yet. So I'm just like, come on, get home, ship me my stuff.
Right.
But I'm surprised they didn't release or have something to show at Adepticon. Or maybe they do, because it's a miniatures game. Maybe they said this is a board game with miniatures,
right. So maybe,
therefore we're not bringing it.
Yeah, because Gamma's the game. Yeah, so I don't know. But, so that was something I thought was funny. Just, reminded me of Attack Wing. And then in the article it says, and the 11th wave of Attack Wing miniatures are coming out this year. 11?
What version of dragons are on there now?
I don't know.
Or they have to, like, alternate pose ones.
Right.
Or the weird ones that no one really cares about, like the Elder Brain Dragon, only referenced in whatever thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So, also, probably will not be getting that.
Oh, yeah.
I would play the f*** out of it if someone sent it to us.
Right. So it will go on the Amazon wish list that we'll link up on the site. There. Yeah, we should start that. That might be a good thing to, because if you don't like Patreon or subscribing or doing anything, yeah, an Amazon
wish list. Hey, send us this game. Yeah.
Yeah, right. We'll just put stuff that they actually will ship to Japan on the list.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, right. All right. And the last thing, Roll versus Evil. Hmm. So a little notice that the owners or creators of, or founders, I'm sorry, of Modiphius Entertainment, so Chris and Rita Birch, started a new charitable organization, a nonprofit, a new tabletop nonprofit called Roll versus Evil. And their first campaign, they will focus on Ukraine. Hmm. So people that are participating are just a huge list of everybody, mm-hmm. basically, sure. in the board game industry. So Chaosium, Cubicle 7, Gamma, Green Ronin, Magpie, Mantic, Mythic, Parabellum, Paizo, Q Workshop. It's basically everyone. Our Talisarian, Roll20, Steve Jackson, Steamforge, Titanforge, and UK Games Expo. Hmm. So, a statement from Roll versus Evil. The first event aims to keep it simple, asking interested gamers to just play a game online or in person on March 26th, Saturday. The group will, they suggest ways that you can, that player comments, players commit a few dollars for playing, and then during play, think up interesting ways to encourage donations.
Okay,
so re-rolls or things like that. So you're kind of doing like live streams and things that raise money for charity, right. and then they'll give you a way to donate what you raised specifically to them. And so Roll20 is also making it, giving some free support to this. So the virtual platform will offer a free bundle of games to play, and the organizers included examples of several organizations they're currently supporting. So the thing that – so it sounds great, and it's a catchy name, but the thing that was funny to me is it's Roll versus Evil. Okay, so we can talk about evil in Ukraine, in the invasion of Ukraine. But then they're also talking about the disabled, LGBTQ+, senior citizens with pets. It's like, so these are charities you're donating right. to, but what's the evil part of senior citizens with pets? The senior citizens without pets are the scourge of humanity. So it's catchy and fun, and they got a nice logo for it. But it's so funny when once you get away from, like, you know, humanitarian crises, you know, charities, then you get...
Senior citizens without pets.
Right. It's like...
That is a bit... I understand casting the, not necessarily casting the net, but I understand like broadening thing, being like, here's a wide swath of charities you could donate to mm-hmm. in an effort to encourage as many people mm-hmm. as possible to participate. But yeah, it is a little odd when you're like, okay, Roll versus Evil, and here's the big one, like, yeah, humanitarian crisis, is, and then
right.
no pets. No pets for old people. Right. Like, no country for old men, no pets for old people. Right? Interesting. It's also kind of interesting where it sounds like Roll versus Evil is not... Basically, they're organizing things, mm-hmm. right? They're kind of like, we've set a day, we've lined up some charities, here's some suggested charities, here's some things you can do. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're not collecting any of the money themselves,
right.
which I'm not saying is positive or negative. I'm just saying, okay, they're just kind of more the overall organizer.
It may be through them. Yeah, it might be through them. Well, the one thing that they are doing, though, part of their contribution is they have organized kind of investment asset management companies and things to do matching funds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
So that was the thing. Cool. That wasn't in the statement. That was a little bit earlier in the release that donations will be matched by a private equity firm up to a certain amount. So that's the part that they're kind of getting involved. They're getting people to match money for these different
Cool.
Different
that wasn't funds. Me saying they're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. It was more just like they're hands off with the money. They've set things up. They've gotten kind of not necessarily sponsors but donors to match mm-hmm. donations. Okay, that's cool.
And the one thing that I like that they mentioned also is they're promising transparency, which I think is important with charities, especially when charities just spring from the news, any crisis or anything in the news, suddenly you can donate to it and you have no idea right. where these funds are actually going. So as they move forward, they will be offering evidence of photos, videos, and testimonials to demonstrate the effect of the charity going to the cause. So...
Okay.
Yeah. So they're going to try as much as possible to kind of, you know, tell people, look at this is what, you know, we did this and this guy has a dog. Now.
Right. I thought that transparency would be more just like a paper trail, being like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, look, here's the proof where we actually donated. I don't know which one I would. Hopefully it would be both. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one I would prefer because, like, a video of a letter or someone saying eventually, basically, like, yes, Seniors for Pets got me a dog. It's kind of like, I mean, like, I'm kind of being a bit facetious, mm-hmm. but that to me is a proof, but could also be faked.
Yeah, right? That's the, yeah, yeah.
So when you said transparency, that's why paper trail is the first thing that went through my head, which could also be faked, I suppose.
Yeah,
so,
but yeah. I think charitable organizations have to be open to audits and things. So okay. I think that the paperwork is kind of implied right. with a lot of charities.
So since it's already implied by saying we're, you know, more, even more transparency than, yeah, okay.
So we'll see. But yeah, so tabletop doing, and I think video games did something like this. A while ago, there was an organization like this. I forget the title, but it had one of those catchy titles like Play for Kids or whatever.
Right, something like that.
something. But they raised, charity. They raised, they were a charitable organization that involved a lot of, like, you know, streamers and
right.
people in video games to then do events that, you know, like an organized event.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Looking at you, Critical Role.
Yes. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Raise that money. So, we'll see how they do. And this might be one of those things, too, that if they can organize it every year, it'll just build and build because more people get organized or more people be involved. And they already have the participation of a lot of the big
right.
companies. So maybe it'll be a day where people donate. Okay, here's the adventure to play on the Roll versus Evil event.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and especially because Roll20 is involved, that means
cool.
We can stream it very easily. Mm. All right. So that'll do it.
Yeah.
Nice. So a real roller coaster of the good and bad.
Yeah.
But we'll move on from here.
Yeah. Next week it'll be just be like.
Yeah. Right. It'll be just a bunch of nothing.
No drama at all.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I'm spamming bear gray plastic miniature photos of the blue tacked. Perry miniature stuff that I'm putting nice. Together. So, yeah, they all look kind of the same, but until I get those sludge heads, and I'm going to have to do a lot of head swaps. And I don't think they look that interesting, where it's easy to mix them up.
Mm-hmm.
So, interspersed with my usual parenting tweets. So,
yeah. Nice.
Anyway. How about you?
Excellent. Well, I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoon. So Abuse Cartoons. So that's on Monday evenings, Tuesday afternoon, if you're in Asia. And Abuse Cartoons on all social media and both on YouTube and Twitch. That's streamed. And you can go to gocomics.com/domesticabuse for 20 years of a single panel gag cartoon about food and staplers and remote controls. All right. And if you'd like to support what we're doing at The Weekly, please visit patreon.com/upturntable and become a weakling, one of the strongest of all patrons.
The strongest of all weaklings.
And upturntable.com is where you can find everything that we're doing and on social media as well, upturntable. And and so right now we're in the middle of Cronopia. So we're up the run up to the launch of the Kickstarter on March 29th.
Cool.
We're going to be playing the demo set. So demo rules with two scenarios to play, but they gave us dice and everything. Yeah, in the box. Yeah.
And shipping to Japan.
Yeah, right. That, that was really
probably
great.
Doubled the price of the thing. Yeah,
right. Yeah, so that was really nice. So yeah, thank you again, Martin, for shipping us a demo pack, and we will definitely get some videos to play.
Dibs on devout.
Yes, and you can see me unboxing this, and then mostly on camera assembling it on a live stream.
How much cursing did you do when you snapped that double hafted axe?
It was mostly tears. I think people just saw tears dropping onto the the surface, the cutting surface. But the quality of the cards and everything is really good.
Ooh,
and
nice.
This is just their example, so it didn't have to be,
Ooh, yeah.
So I think the production quality of everything is going to be really good.
Sweet.
And they've got great illustrators and things working on it. Coming
I can tell
up.
Just by like the shot on the side of the box, those are the shoulder pads I remember.
Yes,
the
yes.
giant ones that are so wildly impractical.
Yeah. The sculptor is a Spanish studio that did the sculpting, and the head of that studio did a really good job of updating but still keeping all of those things, those visual things that are like, this is Cronopia, with each of the races and everything.
Cool.
And the poses are, as you can tell from the renders on the box, really dynamic. So he started with that just straight on illustration, and then changed to really dynamic poses. So on the tabletop, they're going to look really great in combat.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So that will do it for this week. We'll be back to do the same next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.